Blog Talk Radio.
All right, here we go. Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the PRF Table. This is your host, Dr. Nate Dunlap, and today's going to be a very interesting show. We are broadcasting live on Facebook and also coming as we normally do on Blog Talk Radio at 12:30 every other Tuesday. You know, it's kind of interesting. Let me just say it as I can say it. You know, God places certain things in my heart and my spirit, and I am very good at doing my very best at making sure that I follow the path that God has laid forth before us. Last year, God spoke to me, and if you've been following us since the beginning of the year, God spoke to me toward the end of the year and said, I want you to focus on next year, financial empowerment. And some of you who know me know that I am a very, very expressive person when it comes to some of the norms in society, the norms in church. And it's so interesting that it wasn't just about God saying, talk about financial empowerment, because we were coming into 2019, because we know that people get excited and all of this on watch night services. It was because God knew that there were some things coming down the pipeline, things that he cared not to share with me, but that's cool. We don't always need that. And then God spoke to me and said, no, I need you to focus on this a little while longer. So I'm thinking, this is me, Dunlap. I'm thinking, well, I'll just go for the first quarter. And then what happens is God makes it clear that we need to cover this for the first 6 months of the year. And so God gave me a group of individuals to bring on as guests at various times throughout the six-month period. He had me to revise during our weekly show at 7 p.m. on Thursday evenings, as we've done for over 5 years, over six years now. And to bring this to you during the day, because he understood, and I understood it a little bit as well, that a lot of times we're competing for people's time in the evenings. And so here we are. If you've been with us, you know that we've had some very, very good guests, white and black, talking about financial empowerment. And that whole word of financial empowerment, you can't even get to financial empowerment if you don't even understand what empowerment means. So today, I'm going to share with you why I'm pissed off. I'm one of these cats that it takes a lot for me to get upset. Y'all may have heard me over the years, Mama, and how I've expressed some things. But at some point in time, getting pissed off is a whole different story. I love my people. I love God's people. There's some white folks that would do some stuff for me that black folk don't even think about. There's some white folks that have supported this ministry, where black folk have been acting like a bunch of clowns. Bishop Nate Holcomb said to me one time, he said, some pastors are not mature enough to handle this, Nate. And so as I get through this little opening right now, I'll share with you as we go along why I feel right now. I know that, again, some of the things that I talk about from a perspective that may rub some people the wrong way. But you know, Mama, as I said on Sunday, I preached at Shady Grove Baptist Church in Hurstboro, Alabama. And I had in my sermonic notes, Dr. Anderson, something that I didn't share on Sunday because the Spirit just didn't allow it. But I say this to everybody right now. I'm a black man. I'm unapologetic. Before you see Dr. Dunlap, you don't know I'm a doctor until I tell you. You don't know I'm a doctor, have an earned doctor degree, unless somebody shares that with you. You don't know if I know I grew up in the streets of Philly unless you see it in my bio or somebody tells you. You don't know how many degrees I've earned unless it's presented to you. You don't know about any of the struggles that I've had in my life unless it's shared with you. The one doggone thing that you know when I stand up in front of you with my 6'2" inch self, my 210-pound self, and I'm not bony like I used to be at 165 pounds at the same height. The one thing you doggone know is that I'm a black man. No matter how many white circles I can run in, no matter how many white Christians say they love me, at the end of the day, when you see me, doggone, you see me as a black man. I'm unapologetically black. I'm never going to lay down my blackness for any freaking body. I can tell you that I've always called myself black. You can call yourself what you want to call yourself. But I consider myself black because of where I grew up, because of the experiences. And then I come into the freaking South. I went to college. I did my undergrad in Virginia, Virginia State University, HBCU. I've been living in the South since, this is 20 years. This is my 20-year mark almost, coming up in a couple of months. And I'm amazed. I'm amazed at what continues to go on in the freaking South. And so I go back to the theme of 2019 for us on the show. It's financial empowerment plus 2019. And the reason it's plus 2019 is because the financial empowerment that we're giving, all these guests that we have coming on, the things that we're sharing, the way God is leading us, this thing is not about just being able to be good in 2019. This is about being good beyond 2019. And some interesting things. I'm going to try to get to what I'm going to get to today, but you got to hear this. You know, I've heard, Mama, I've heard, and Mama's here. Y'all know Mama. Mama, say hi, Mama.
Hi, everyone.
You know, Mama's always here at the table with us. 10 years ago, July 2008 in Mississippi. Toured from New York down to Florida over to Mississippi. Been in many of churches, helped a lot of people. We may not be the organization that everybody knows and talks about, like Financial Peace University or Crown.org. I'm not scared to say their names because what God has for us is what he has for us, and they don't work for everybody. But I find it interesting that at the time right now, where God has said, Doc, I need you, or Nate, he called me, they don't call me Doc. Nate, I need you to focus on financial empowerment for the people for a whole 6 months. That some of the attacks that have come upon us, things that have come up upon us that from a family perspective, from a ministry perspective, and it's not been all bad stuff, Mike. A lot of good things have been happening, but I got to stay on guard. At the same time, I can't stop saying what thus says the Lord. I can't stop saying what I know God would have me to say because our people need to be freaking empowered. I haven't considered this ministry to be the largest. Lord knows we're not the most financially backed with paper. But we get the job done of what we have to do. But it's amazing that we keep getting these subtle and sometimes open reminders about how wicked the world really is. And I find it interesting that today, we were supposed to have somebody, Tasha Tony was supposed to be our guest. Tasha Tony is, I call her the bank president, but in Columbus, Georgia, there's only one black bank in Columbus, Georgia, Kathy. Black-owned bank, and it's called Citizens Trust Bank. She's been on our show before during Black History Month a couple of years ago, along with Pastor Javon Jackson, who is Pastor Philip Semple, CME Church in Phoenix City, Alabama. But at that time, he was the pastor of the monument, the Holsey Chapel in Columbus, Georgia. the Fortress on 8th. And so she was scheduled to be on the show today. And it's amazing that the phone lines at the bank are not working. Talked to her this morning. It's amazing that several people have called out. It's amazing that she can't be with us today. So I didn't think about it, but this last thing that happened, as I said, well, you know, we'll shift. We'll put you on another day. Believe the Lord said, well, just focus on what you focused on Sunday, which was the attitude between what the attitude, the difference between poverty and wealth. What's the difference between poverty and wealth? You know, it's kind of interesting that yesterday I got a telephone call from an individual, and they said to me, and I'm going to tell you, the difference between poverty and wealth is attitude. That's the difference. They said to me that they wanted me to take down, listen to me, they wanted me to take down an episode of the PRF table from freaking 3 years ago. Now, I'm wondering, what the heck is all this about? And I really didn't understand it, but I know there's something more that's there from what this individual says to me. And so the individual, they say, well, they're expecting me to give a response back in a week, or as they threaten me, you know, they'll pass it on to their attorney. What am I saying? What is the Lord saying that has somebody so pissed off and scared that we need to take down an episode of the PRF table? Have we said any lies? And so I turned this situation over. I said, listen, I got other stuff to do today. So I turned that situation over yesterday. And then today, the guests cannot come on the show because there's some other stuff, some interference, if you will, delivered on Sunday about the attitude, our attitudes and our mindsets towards some things and towards poverty and towards wealth. And then here's, I'm going to give you what the icing is on the cake. The icing on the cake was that I saw a Facebook post this morning from a trusted colleague. I won't say her name, but a trusted colleague that is was one of my predecessors when I led the Army's personal financial management course. And this article was that the Alabama Senate passes a bill to reduce payday loan costs. And in short, it what this bill does, because, you know, it goes from the Senate and then to the House. What this thing did, it says, you know, payday loans are like 10 days, right, from payday to payday. It's a short period of time. But this is proposing that it sets the terms of payday loans at 30 days versus 10 days. Now here's what you got to understand. There are some people that don't want this to happen. The reason people don't want things like this to happen because it benefits one freaking group of people over another. So let me tell you what I said. Consideration, everything that's come up so far that I've said, and you know what? This may be an hour show today. I said, no, how about this? Let me read to you some of the stuff that's in the article. Because a lot of times what a lot of people do is they continue to just look at headlines and they never read what's in these articles. They never read what people say. They never hear what people say for themselves. And they just start judging for themselves based on a headline. The headline is Alabama Senate passes a bill to reduce payday loan costs. This was from March of 2018. People who take out payday loans will have more time to pay them off under a bill that passed the Alabama Senate today, again, March of 2018, a change that would effectively reduce the triple-digit interest rates borrowers pay. Why in the world are we freaking dealing with triple-digit interest rates on any freaking thing in the United States of America? I can't get it. I can't get it. I can't believe that anybody would believe that is anything but usury, whether you believe in the Bible or not. It is well above and exceedingly above anything that you can fathom. 100, 200, 300% interest on a loan. Payday lenders have opposed the bill to the extended term. So the payday lenders, the ones who are lending money to people at 100, 200, 300% interest are opposed to it. Well, what do you think they would do? The Senate passed the bill by a vote of 20 to 4. Then it goes to the House of Representatives. Arthur Orr, a Republican from Decatur, he acknowledged that this proposal faces tough sledding in the House. The House committee has been pretty much the Bermuda Triangle, and this I'm quoting him, the Bermuda Triangle in the place that any payday lending reform does not exit from. So you already know they're proposing this bill because they're trying to do something that's going to help the citizens of Alabama not to live in poverty. Because here's the truth of the matter. Show me somebody that makes $600,000 a year going to a payday loan. They get a couple of $1,000s until payday. So we know that the individuals that are utilizing payday loans are people who don't have savings accounts. If you had a savings account, you wouldn't need to go to a payday loan location. If you had credit cards with certain substantial amounts of credit or you're able to get one, you wouldn't have to go to a payday loan location. The current law, going back to the article, the current law allows lenders to set the terms. The law, listen, how many times do we have to keep dealing with the same thing over and over, Pastor Ware? You can talk all day long, and you can't be not political. You just stop talking, whoever it is, just stop talking about not having these political conversations. Because it's the things that are inside of the law that traps people up. Because it's in the law, Mama. That's how they're able to get away with it. And you think this is fine? But I'm going somewhere with this. Lenders are allowed to charge 17.5% of the advanced amount. So if they lend you $100, they can charge 17.5%, which equals an annual rate of 455%. Listen, it requires a 30-day term, and it would effectively cut that rate in half by giving borrowers more time to pay. Sounds good to me. Sounds freaking reasonable to me. Orr said it makes the debt more manageable because people are using the money to pay their bills on a monthly basis. You can't survive every other week paying 17.5% interest and think that interest is going to go down. No. So here we have Senator Tom Wiley. I'm laying it all out on the line today. Whatever. Republican out of Auburn. He said that the bill would put lenders out of business and eliminate jobs for those who work for the company. He spoke against the bill for an hour, a whole freaking hour speaking out against a bill that would help people to not live in poverty. He read off the first names of the employees in the payday loan school. His words, quote unquote, these businesses will be gone and these businesses will be out of a job. For somebody to own a payday loan business, I want you to ask yourself, do you think that is the only business that somebody who operates a payday loan business owns? I asked you that question. Do you think that's the only business, that is the only business that they own, or that they just own just one payday loan space? And they got all of their eggs in one basket. Orr said the payday loan industry is thriving in states that charge lower rates than this bill would provide. Tell me where in what states. Well, first of all, I don't give a freaking doggone about any other state other than the freaking state that I live in right now. That's the state that I got to be first and foremost concerned about because I live here. Listen, and I'm moving from this. According to the state banking department, borrowers took out 1.8 million payday loans in Alabama last year. 1.8. Total amount borrowed was $609 million freaking dollars. People utilize payday loans because their backs are up a freaking wall against the wall. why people go to pay their loans. I don't know if I mentioned it in my book, Don't Leave Me Like This, but I know the detriment that comes from payday loans, because it puts people into a cycle that unless you have extra coming in, I can borrow some money from you until payday, but if my pay is the same, then that means I'm going to be short next week, next payday period. The fees that were paid on this $609 million that was loaned, the fees that people paid was $106 million. $106 million. There are a lot of things that could go on with $106 million because the fees was the extra money that was put on top of the money that was borrowed. So, yes, those who own payday loan businesses. I'm not going to say everybody, but the article said that they were pushing back. So unless we know who they were, then I'm putting everybody into the doggone bucket. There are 630 licensed payday lenders in the state. 630. How many freaking churches we got in the state? I know I'm going to piss some of y'all off. Whatever. We know that this crap is happening over and over and over. And then we have a nerve to say, as collectively as a body, even as a body of believers, even as pastors and ministers, that there's something wrong with the government. No, it's freaking something wrong with us. How in the world do we let payday loan places continue to keep opening up? Can I help you understand something? If you're watching from Birmingham, tell me how many payday loan places are in Hoover. But then tell me how many over by Inslee. If you watch it from Columbus, Georgia, tell me how many are up in Green Island Hills. But tell me how many are on the south side of Columbus, Georgia, off Victory Drive. These things don't happen just out of happenstance. They happen because they're intentional. So let me tell you why I just thought about today. As I knew we were going to talk about the difference between poverty and wealth is attitude. Because I posted this article. I said, let me go, and I read it, and I encourage people to read what I post. I looked at another article. I posted this article as well. This is from the other day. It says, lawmakers drum up support for payday loan reform in Mountain Brook. They had a forum at Canterbury United Methodist Church in Mountain Brook. This woman said she entered into the bank to withdraw $25, and she was told, you don't have cash. Her bank account dwindled to zero because her then husband took out payday loans without her knowledge, wiping out her family savings. She became homeless and was taken to a women's shelter. Children were working 5 days, five jobs to stay afloat. Her savings. She said, you may lose everything, and that concrete ground may be too hard for you only to look up. There was somebody named State Representative Danny Garrett, Republican out of Trustville. The bill's main sponsor said the opposition to the payday loans runs against political and religious lies. This is an issue that's united all faith groups. It has united Democrats, Republicans, liberals, and conservatives. Told the forum at Canterbury United Methodist Church in Mountain Brook, we have a really strong coalition. If we can get this to the floor, I think we can get this to pass. Where is the church? Is my question. You can't on one breath talk about government and what government does, but not be involved in the process. If you're afraid to speak out about what the heck is going on in government, give up your 501c3 and trust God. Half of y'all with 501c3s ain't taking advantage of it anyway because you ain't using it to get any grant money. So give it up and do the right thing. Speak out about these doggone things that's not pleasant, that you know God is not pleased with. If God in his word, since he mentioned it in his word about usury and it is not acceptable to God, how do you sit back and allow 300% interest if you borrowed money from me. Think about this. If you borrowed $100 from me and I charge you $100 interest, then you don't pay me back. And then I try to take you to court. You know what's probably going to happen? I'm going to lose because of usury. But how in the world do payday loan places get away with this? Because it's the freaking law. But how did it get to be in the law? Because somebody who has the knowledge, the intellect, maybe an evil heart, found a way to craft this and get others to vote and go along with it. And here we stand, trying to get something taken away. Not even taken away, just get it reduced for so it can be better for the people so they don't have to live in so much poverty. How in the world are you in the state of Alabama working in anything, government, church, when the median income for a one-family household is $15,000, a median income for a four-family house is like $32,000, $33,000. What? So how do we get across to people about wealth when they're just trying to survive? So let me go to something else. So I reposted the page. And I said, according to the state banking department, I copied this, quote unquote, according to the bank statement, took out $1.8 million payday loans in Alabama last year. They totaled about $609 million borrowed, and the borrowers paid $106 million in fees on those loans. And here was my statement. It is so disgusting when lawmakers fight against usury for the masses in order to protect the few. Fighting this in the House had nothing to do with the payday loan workers. It was to protect the riches of the owners. And I say, trust me, the workers did not collectively earn $106 million, and definitely not a substantial chunk of the $609 million. I said, read the article and start paying attention to your yays and your nays. Let me tell you what the yays and the nays mean. Don't worry about that. The yays and the nays are the ones that say yes to the bills or say no to the bill. Yeas and the nays represent how people vote. The individuals who you voted for or the individuals who you did not vote for. My hack, my tags, my hashtags was knowledge and justice. So I go about my day. And then I get this notice. Please don't tell me they deleted this. Then I get this notice. And it says this at the bottom. You go on my page, you'll see. It says the Alabama Senate passes a bill to reduce payday loans. That's the title. But at the bottom it says, this post goes against our community standards, so no one else. I find it interesting that I get a call from somebody yesterday that says, take down something off your Facebook page, remove my name from everything. A whole bunch of other stuff we may have to deal with it some other way, so I'll be quiet on that. But it's interesting that we can't talk about black banking because of what happened at the black bank today. I find it interesting that I get this post that doesn't get posted because it violates community standards. Well, what community are you talking about? And I can tell you that there's been some things that I've reported for violation of community standards. So somebody had to report this. There's nothing inflammatory. I'm not violating anybody's civil rights. I'm not speaking out against anybody who didn't do anything that is not worth speaking out about for the wrong reason. But I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to fight for the right reason every last time. That's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. You know, I was talking about Carter G. Woodson on Sunday. It was a Black History Month program. And I spoke about how Black History Month was not Black History Month. I spoke about how Dr. Carter G. Woodson, he graduated from Harvard Law School in 1912. He was an educated man. I spoke about how a couple of other esteemed gentlemen, I can't recall all their names, I don't want to mess up their names, but they founded an organization, and the organization is still going on today. But it never started off as Black History Month. I find it interesting that on the History Channel, History.com, that it said that Black History Month is about how when you allow people to state what your history is not your story, is their story. Their story oftentimes doesn't get communicated in the manner in which it should when it's my story. You can't tell me about living on Plymouth Street, but I can tell you about it because that's where I grew up. You can't tell me about living in a crack-infested neighborhood during the 80s, but I can tell you about it because that's where I grew up. You can't tell me I don't appreciate my hood because I got a doctorate degree. I got 4 degrees. Some folk are trying to get one right now, so I'm grateful. I did the work too that was afforded to me. It was things that I did to put me in a position to be able to get this. I had some people in my corner that said, listen, this is the thing that you need to do. And it's fine, it's so interesting because I'm talking about the attitude being the difference between poverty and wealth. You know, when the organization was founded, and I'm going to find it, the Association for the Study of African American Life and History, that's what it's named today. That was in 1915. But you know what was going on during that time? Well, the Emancipation Proclamation, 1862, right? President Lincoln said, free and slave. It's good. So you free people on a piece of paper that says, or you give a piece of paper that says that individuals are free. Black folks are free. Negroes are free. But yet you do not provide them with an economic base in which to be free. You don't give them something to go along with. You send them out there, but here's what's interesting. This happened in 1862. It took effect January 1st, 1863, the Emancipation Proclamation. Here we are, and I heard about this thing called May Day in Alabama. You better start understanding your history. So here, so now we're dealing with this, and I'm reading, I'm doing some risk in history, and I'm saying, hold on. Let me trace this thing back a little bit. Oh, well, when the 13th Amendment was abolished in 1865, it gave that relief. Let's it abolished slavery in the United States, January 31st, 1865. But slavery and voluntary servitude, although it was abolished, it also allowed for it to be a crime or punishment for a crime. So hold on. So you're abolishing slavery, but we can enslave people. You can enslave people for a crime. Crimes that black people, our ancestors, could doggone be tried for, be convicted of, judged, jury, and duty. It was any freaking thing that any white man wanted to say it was. That was what a freaking crime was. So you got to understand that there's some things that are in place. There's some things that have been in place for years. Yes, you need to fight for those things. You don't just let things just continue to sit there as if it's okay, because at any time, anything on the book can be enforced. That's the danger. Let's say 10 years ago, I'm black and I meet this white woman. Let's go 20 years ago. And I live down in Mississippi. And we love each other, and we go to church, and we're Christian, and everybody's all good. Nobody got a problem. And we decide to get married. Not a problem. Yeah, all right. Somebody had a problem with that. Do you know that if it's on the books that a black person cannot marry a white woman, then you can be tried? Then you now are guilty of a crime? So just because stuff is not coming out right now, you got to be paying attention, because that's how a lot of people are still in poverty, because they're not paying attention. find it interesting that slavery was so much about economics. Find it interesting that payday loans is about economics. Find it interesting that so many people who have the ability and the means and the financial wealth or and the riches get to make and call so many shots. Where is the church? See, this is not something that you can deal with on a Sunday morning, Pastor, and go back to talk about something else. No, you got to stay in this fight. You got to continue to keep talking about it until it resonates with the people. You got to bring other folks in that until it resonates with the people. Let me hit something up with y'all on from the Word of God, and I'm gonna sit down. Yeah, I know that's what we're saying. I'm gonna sit down. I'm gonna say that about five times. Y'all know me. In the book of Numbers, Numbers chapter 13, we have an account. We have an account of when Moses sent out the 12 spies. Sent out the 12 spies to scope out the land of Canaan, the place where God was going to send. Was leading his people to. The 12 individuals that were there, they represented the 12 tribes of Israel. They go to the place where they're able to see into the land of Canaan. They see these giants, but the Bible declares in Numbers chapter 13 that they came back presenting, they came back with fruit that was so large that more than one person had to carry it. And I said this on Sunday. I said, if you go to the Piggly Wiggly, for those of y'all, let me hit everybody. If you go to the Piggly Wiggly, if you go to the Food Line, I got to go up north. If you go to Pathmark, if you go to Safeway, if you go to any of these places and you see a bunch of grapes that are this big, one grape is this big, you got to know the bunch is this big, then you may not want to eat that. But what they were bringing back was proof and evidence of the place where God was sending them into. So they come back. They go back, there's 12 of them, they make this report. They have the evidence in their freaking hands of the wealth of the land that God was sending them to. But 10 of these jokers, they want to talk about the giants in the land. They want to say that the land is filled with giants, and we look like grasshoppers to them. That's what they think of us. We feel like we're grasshoppers to these giants, but that's also what they're thinking about us. But yet the Bible doesn't declare that there was never any interaction or even the giants even seeing them in the land of Canaan. So that was their mindset. Their mindset was defeated. But how are you defeated when you have evidence of a place where God has sent you to? How do you go see have a defeated mindset when God has brought y'all from 400 plus years of slavery under the Pharaoh? I explained to everybody, and I've said this before, that there's a difference between being in slavery and being in the wilderness. The wilderness is the place where God shows up and shows out. Go read through it. They were in the wilderness for 39 years, 10 months, and about 6 weeks or roughly, but 39 years, 10 months, definitely. And all that God did for them while they were in the wilderness. He took care of them. He protected them. He let them go a little bit on their own way. He slapped them on the behind a couple of times. He gave them so much instruction in the wilderness so that when they got to the promised land, they knew how they were to live. There was one named Caleb. And my focal text on Sunday was verse 24. Chapter 14. But my servant Caleb has a different attitude than the other half. He has remained loyal to me. So I will bring him into the land he explored, and his descendants will possess their full share of the land. He didn't say nothing about anybody else's descendants but Caleb. Now, you have to understand that this particular time when he said this, this was before God told him that many of them was not going into the promises. Because, see, the 10 who didn't have the faith or the courage or whatever was going on in their freaking mind, however they had been corrupted, now they corrupt the other folks. This wasn't the enemy. This was them. They corrupt the other folks. We wish we was back in Egypt. Come on, man. You got grapes this freaking big. You know it's the, you got the evidence of the place where God is sending you. They ain't had grapes this big in Egypt. God gets tired. He said, you know what? I'll tell you what. Moses, listen, here's the deal. I'm tired of this. But look at it. It's in chapter 14. I'll tell you what. Here's what's going to happen. Since they want to act like that, since y'all want to act like that, here's what's going to happen. Y'all going to die out here in the wilderness. Yeah, you're going to die out here in the wilderness. But here's what, because I'm so gracious, because I'm God and I am gracious, what I'm going to do, I'm going to allow your children, I'm going to allow your descendants to get into the promises. Listen, here's what he says. You all will drop dead in the wilderness because you complain against me. Everyone is 20 years old, including in the registration, will die. You will not enter and occupy the land I swore to give to you. The only exceptions is Joshua and Caleb. So you're not going to be able to go. There's some people that's not going to go because their mindsets have been stuck. It's their attitude. Their attitude is of poverty. That was a poverty type of mindset. You see the evidence. You know it's there. It's a poverty mindset. Look up the definition of poverty. But here's what God said. But you know what? Your descendants. This is what he said. Your children will be carried off as plunder. I'll bring them into the land, and they will enjoy what you have despised. So you had it in your hand, but you despised it. Despised it, what was right in your hand. Despised it. But you're going to drop that in the woods. So I'm going to let your children go into the promised land. But hold on, let's go back up. What did he say? He said, but my servant Caleb has a different attitude. He's remained loyal to me. I'll bring him into the land. His descendants will possess the full share. Well, hold on. That seems like they may contradict a little bit because he said that before. But no, keep going down. You will all drop dead. Then he said, your children will be carried off. I'm going to let them get in, but I'm going to let them be carried off. So now it goes back into a poverty cycle. Now it goes back into this cycle of slavery, of bondage, because they're going to get in there for a little while. But they're going to be taken away as plunder. This is the thing. If your mindset, if your attitude is, listen, if I'm in poverty right now, when I get out of poverty, I'm not going back to that place. That's not acceptable to go back to that place. That's the type of mindset you need to have. I don't want to go back to being poverty if you come from me to begin. You haven't gone from me to begin. You already had everything given to you. You shouldn't want to go into a place of poverty or bondage. Poverty is bondage. Here's what's tough for me is watching people that have it in their hands. Some of you who are pastors and ministers and get the pulpit, and we do what we do, have it in our hands because we have the opportunity to make sure that we're doing everything that we possibly can to get people from a place of poverty, to get people from a place of bondage into a place of wealth. Okay, well, listen, I'm not talking about prosperity. I'm not talking about prosperity gospel. I don't know where that came from. But the truth of the matter is God is about wealth. He took them out of Egypt. When he took them out of Egypt, they didn't go empty-handed. Matter of fact, God said, before he told them, he said, listen, Moses, when they leave, have them to go and get from the Egyptians the gold and the silver and the cloths of linen. So when Pharaoh said for them to go, listen, you got to know when your time is up for being in bondage, when your time is up for being in poverty, you got to be ready to doggone move. Your attitude has to be right now that when it's time for me to go from this place to the next place, when it's time for God to take me from here to there, I got to be ready to move. God set it up that the people who had them in bondage, the Egyptians, that they was able to take from the Egyptians, not forcefully. Do you understand this? They went and asked them, and they gave it to them. Where did they do that at? They do it in this book. So you got to get yourself into position. You got to get ourselves into position. When God says, I need you to go from here to there, you got to be ready to go. There's no time to be trying.
trying to set up. There's no time to wait 4 more years until you retire. There's no time for me to go ahead. I got to finish this school because I'm 30 credits away. Listen, when God says it's time to go, you got to go. Caleb was one who understood. Caleb was over 20 years old. Caleb understood the history of his people. But Caleb also had courage. So where's the Joshua? Where's the other Calebs? Where's the other Joshuettes? Where's all the other Calebettes? Where are they? If you can't freaking identify them, then likelihood that they may not be there. The other likelihood is that they may be there, but they may not recognize their potential. So somebody has to be out there leading the charge on this. I find it interesting that we're in a place right now. There's some folks don't want us to say certain things that's going to benefit you. And the truth of the matter is greed. It's greed. Greed is evil. Greed. Greed is sin. So how are we dealing with this? How are we wrapping our heads around this? It's the attitude. Attitude. What's my mindset? I'll tell you, this is several things that just I just don't understand. I don't understand. And I used to go on people's page and be on Facebook and being constantly just going back and forth with folks. I can't do that. I can't do it. It's not even worth it. Because you have to be positioned and ready to receive knowledge, to receive instruction, even to receive rebuke. So it's the attitude. I'm encouraging you. Have that attitude like Caleb. Caleb was the one who spoke out. Joshua was a warrior. So yes, when you stand out, you need some warriors with you. You always can't be the one speaking out and have the courage as well as being the warrior to do the fighting. Moses had Joshua on his team. Who's your Joshua that's ready to fight? Just going to say this freaking stuff right here? No, we're not going to be silent about people being coming up against payday loans when we know the detriment that it does. No, we're not going to be silent about that. And here's what I said the other day. I said, listen, I asked the pastor of the church, I said, come here for me. And I gave this example. I said, listen, let me just say this. I'll say what I told them what I said. Several years ago, I was the vice president for the NAACP for Russell County, Phoenix City branch here in Alabama. And I remember there was a cross that was put into a black person's yard. And I'm here to tell you that in the early 2000s, I'm like, what the hell? What in the hell is going on? Because that is nothing but evil. That ain't nothing but Satan. We're in 2000 plus. What are you doing? I'm ready to crack heads. I'm ready to deal with this. And the president at the time, the late great Deacon Alfonso Johnson, he was a high school principal, member of Omega Psi Phi fraternity, very influential within the Baptist circles. He groomed me for a lot of things. He had me up under his wing when he said this to me. He said, young brother, I retired 2 times. I got guaranteed checks coming in every month. Ain't nothing they can do but you doing me. But he says, you got a family. You got young children. He said, let me be that voice. Let me be out here in the front. It's okay to be next to me. It's okay to be beside me, not to stifle me. But you got to know who's on the team. You got to know where the strengths and the weakness are. Poverty, you start talking about wealth. Never forget that. Didn't always take his advice, but I took it more often than not. And it's kept my behind out of a whole lot of hot water. Who's on your team, man? Who's on your team, sis? Who has the courage to say what you don't want to say on Sunday morning? But your think mindset, attitude. We have so much wealth Now I'm talking about us as black folk right now. Black folk, we got a lot of wealth in our hands. But the truth of the matter is, we give it up so freely, collectively, as a people. And then the ones who have it, they don't give it up freely. People want to say something about how they spend their money. No, they're using wisdom. They're using their own discretion. Listen, I just came back from dealing with, I won't say dealing, from being involved in a situation that happened in Columbia, South Carolina the other day. Where two people died in a public housing unit. Carbon monoxide poisoning. They're putting the people in new apartments. Some are getting Section 8, some are not. They're putting people all over the city, so they're scattered. The people are scattered throughout the city of Columbia, South Carolina. It makes a difference when you're positioned. Because if you're used to your child walking two blocks to school, but now you're halfway across town and you don't have transportation, and public transportation doesn't go by the housing, you're in a different situation. Find nor react the way somebody who does have the resources there to. So now all these people are spread out. But here's the thing, I'm listening to some of the people. They didn't know why I was there. They didn't know my connection or anything. They didn't know anything about PR. And I'm listening to this one resident talk to the lady that I'm speaking to, who's from housing, the housing department. And she said, well, there's a place over at such and such. They got some one bedrooms over there. Well, I need two bedrooms. You know, my grandkids come over. What? I'm listening. That's a mindset. Well, you know, I got this going on, so I can't be on the second floor. I got to be on the first floor. Everything she asked this woman, everything she proposed to this woman, it was something that she just, reason why she couldn't do it. Without even seeing the place, without even knowing the address, without even knowing what resources are around her, nothing. Just, so, well, there's a new one that just was built. So, didn't want that one. Now, listen, you're in public housing. The place where they were at was crap, according to my understanding from being there. It was crap. But yeah, you got an opportunity to go to a new place. Didn't want that. Just wanted what you wanted. So, you know, it's kind of like playing double dutch. Kids, girls used to play double dutch. And then, you know, I had to wait to get their jump in. So I got my jump in. I said, man, let me say something to you. I said, you don't know me from Adam's house, Cat. You don't know why I'm here, what I'm doing. I said, but I've been listening to you. And I said, I may have all the resources that you need. Well, if you got it, well, you know, we just need you to give them to me. I said, well, hold on. I've sat here for an hour listening to everything that this person whom you know and you trust has offered to you. You reject it. Everything. So if I'm going to sit here and listen to you reject from somebody who you know, why, being somebody who you don't know, why would I offer what I have to be able to help you? When you're rejecting from the person who you know. It's a mindset. And so I started thinking and having more conversations, and it's because the system that they're in is not designed for them to get out. It's designed to keep them in public housing. But here's the thing. You can force people to do almost anything else. If you're in the military, they can force you to do a urine analysis. You get called at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm a former non-commissioned officer and former commissioned officer. Calls at 4 o'clock in the morning, they had to drive regardless of where you live, and you get there with your PT uniform on, and you pee in a cup. However long it takes. Nobody leaves. Because you're in that environment, because that's what the rules are, then you have to abide by them. But yet, there's no rules. There's this freedom. This is like an Emancipation Proclamation. Listen, we're going to offer you these parenting classes. We're going to offer you these other classes, but we can't make you take them. Why the heck can't we? We're paying your rent as taxpayers. Because if they did stuff like that, if they offered what we offer at PRF to people in public housing, let me tell you what would happen. They would all not be in public housing for that much longer. Because I know what we do works. 10 years into this, this ain't new to me. But if that was part of the plan, they wouldn't be in public housing 20 and 30 years. Because we'd be teaching them and training them on some things. So guess what? Since that's probably not something that's in their plan, why can't the churches get behind something like that? Why can't pastors get behind something like that? Doggone, if you pastor and folks that live in public housing, what the heck are you doing? Is it good enough for them just to come to church Sunday after holy hands? Thank God that they got another day or able to come back to church another Sunday, but still living in poverty. You're not rich living in public housing. If older folks was living in public housing, $12,000 and $13,000 a year is not a lot of money. You don't become rich making $12,000 or $13,000 a year. Y'all got some emotion out of me today, and I'm listen. You got to believe that this thing is set up. Not for the benefit, not to bring people into wealth, but to keep people in poverty. I've been doing what I'm doing for a long time. I have another life that I've been doing for a long time on a professional level. So I see it and I know it. You may just want to start paying attention to some of the things that have been said. Let's start moving forward to some things. There's plenty of people that are already doing things that can help people get out of poverty. Attach onto it. You don't need to start your own thing just because you got a good idea. Ecclesiastes chapter 3 says there is nothing new under the sun. So just because God gives you a revelation today doesn't mean he didn't give somebody else a revelation 3 weeks ago. You have to seek out those individuals who God is already using. We got to put our all behind it. Just like Deacon Johnson did to me. Listen, let me go out there and be the one talking about this, but be behind me. I am literally done today. I promise you I'm literally done today. This right here, I got to start speaking up about justice. I'm telling you. I'm going to get ready to end. But I'm going to end and I'm going to just let y'all just listen to this. It's about 2 minutes, 38 seconds. Just listen to it. Amen. Listen, I thank y'all for listening. Those who are just coming on, please go back and pick it up. We're doing some great things. We got some new initiatives coming out in the next couple of weeks. That's really going to change the game. And I can tell you that it's been a long time coming. It's been about a year working on something very, very, very critical, actually. Going on 2 years now, but last year we really put some teeth to some things. And I'm going to need y'all's support, I'm telling you. It's nothing worse than being David fighting Goliath. And it's just the difference between David fighting Goliath and David has the Israelite army behind him versus the Israelite army sitting at the house while David is sitting there fighting Goliath and the Philistines are behind him. It's a difference. So I can tell you we need your support. Financial support, yes. Yes, that's needed. But we need people to put their hands to the plow. And I'll say this as a black man. White people have to be involved in the process too. Have to be involved in the process. We can talk about all the isms and everything else that's out there, but white people have to be involved in the process. The religious community has to be involved in the process. And I'll give y'all this. Tune in. We'll be back on the second Tuesday of March. Don't forget Kimberly Silas, who hosts our other radio show, Your Health is Your Wealth. She has been doing an awesome job, and I say it openly plenty of times before I say it again. She is a much better host than Dr. Dunlap is. She is a natural at it. She is doing the work. You can see that she's doing the work. So again, look for her on our page, Kimberly Silas. Connect with her. She can do some wonders for some people's lives. She needs your support as well. All right, so that's it. Bless y'all. Love y'all.